minutes after the hour. Welcome into the whole show, powered by Chevron, live from the Aloe Fiber Studios, and we are doing it again. A victory. Last week was a victory Tuesday. It is a victory Monday. The Broncos get it done, 21-20. They beat the Vikings. Yeah, Susan and Cheryl pumped about that. And there you go, four wins in a row for the Broncos. First time they've done that since 2016. That was the year after the Super Bowl season. Gary Kubiak was still the head coach. Denver went on to post a 9-7 record. So that, I mean, four game win streaks, that's when you're starting to look at a team that can probably win 9+ games. So 5-5 after beating the Vikings. The Vikings are 6-5. A lot to unpack from that game. I don't know what I watched. It felt just like the Monday night game, to be honest. Last week was a lot of conservative-type play from the offense. Russell Wilson hitting those checkdowns left and right. I mean, Samaje Perine had 7 receptions for 60 yards. The backup running back. A lot of those, I think he had 40 of them in that final drive that set up the game-winning touchdown from between Russell Wilson and Courtland Sutton. All right, so poll question of the day. I'll get you guys cooking on it. Go vote at theholeshow.com. At this point, more than halfway through the season, you're sitting at 5-5. Who's the MVP for the Broncos today? Most valuable player. I don't want to hear Sean Payton. Don't give me the Will Lutz thing. I want to know who is the most valuable player for the Broncos as it stands today. Is it Russ? Is it Courtland Sutton, who most of his numbers aren't going to scream at you, save for the touchdowns? He has a lot of touchdowns on the season, man. He has, 8 touchdowns? That's right up there in the tops when you're looking at the rest of the NFL. Not many guys have 8 touchdowns on the season. Is it Courtland Sutton? Is it Justin Simmons, who I thought, save for one hiccup or two yesterday or last night, he was amazing. The decision to ultimately put him on TJ Hawkinson last night when Minnesota's needing to produce, needing to get first downs, they're going to go to their go-to guy. And Justin Simmons, I thought, really shut him down, knocking the ball out of his hands twice in a row, essentially. Javonte Williams, maybe. Patrick Surtain, how about Pat Surtain? He's in the mix, or other. Let's go see where you guys are thinking here today. Again, that's the poll question of the day, available at theholeshow.com. I got 36% saying Justin Simmons. I'm inclined to agree, especially when you look at the defensive side of the ball being as good as they have been in this stretch. Justin Simmons has been leading that. Next is Russell Wilson. Then is Pat Surtain. Then it's Courtland Sutton. I got other. Who is your other? Who is that? Who are we saying at this stage? So let's have some fun today. Let's talk about a dub. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. Sean Payton after the game is still, you know, I like his demeanor, the way he's handling this thing. He's not Josh McDaniels-ing it, where he's screaming and running up and down the field and pumping up the crowd and saying, "We've arrived." He's keeping it real. Here's what Sean Payton had to say after the win.
Well, you were the one that said it. So you're asking me 4 wins in a row. Yeah, I think we got some momentum going. I don't know if I'm ready to groove yet.
I like it. I'm not ready to groove yet either. I think Sean Payton is keeping it 100% real and saying, hey, we love what's happening, but I don't really feel like we're at that level. You know, we've won some gritty games, some dirty games. They're not that attractive. If you're a casual fan just watching, yeah, it's exciting. One-score games are always exciting in football. I don't care how you get there. But if you're watching throughout this game, you know, I don't think you're necessarily going, wow, this is some good football. Let's go through the game a bit here. Vikings first possession, we've already got controversy. Now, the first snap of the game, Dobbs mishandles the snap between the center. So I'm thinking, oh, maybe Dobbs a little nervous in this big-time game. But they ultimately get a 3-yard run, whatever, then a quick throw to tight end Josh Oliver. It's 3rd and 1 to start this game out. What do you do? You line up the tight end. You get him under center. He turns around and pitches it to Dobbs. And then Dobbs gets hit. We have a fumble. we have another Kareem Jackson controversial hit. Here it is.
Hawkinson comes in under center and flips it to Dobbs, who runs to the edge. Oh. Gets hit hard, the ball out, and into the hands of McMillan for Denver. The Broncos come up with a first possession turnover for the second straight game.
Now, we can get into, obviously we'll get into the hit and everything, but you have a hungry defense that's just going after it, trying to force footballs free, trying to give aggressive hits so that they can, cause some chaos, and that's what you're seeing. But obviously, you have Kareem Jackson. Was it an illegal hit? Now, I thought he jarred the ball free for the longest time, and I kept going back looking at the replay. Didn't see all the angles, but that ball was pulled out before. And then Kareem Jackson makes the hit. Was it an illegal hit? By the letter of the law, it was. He led with his helmet. He ends up hitting with his shoulder, but the crown of his helmet does kind of hit that face mask. But you can't lead with the helmet. Dobbs is a running back at that point. He's not a quarterback because the ball was pitched to him. He takes off and runs. Is he defenseless? He's kind of held up in that point. The ball was coming free, and then Kareem Jackson hits him. Yeah, by the letter of the law, they could have called a penalty for leading with your helmet. That could have very well been a penalty. It wasn't. I don't know if we've heard anything today, Angel, about Kareem, if he's going to get fined or anything like that. But I know the NFL is watching him closely, perhaps closer than any other player in the NFL at this point.
I have this from Tom Pelissero a couple hours ago. The NFL is reviewing safety Kareem Jackson's hit on Dobbs for potential discipline. Jackson just returned from a 2-game suspension, so a violation could trigger another suspension.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we're worried about today. I get it. It's difficult to play defense in this league. But Kareem Jackson, I mean, what was that? 3rd-and-1, so technically his third play back. And he's already in a controversial hit. The guy plays with reckless abandon, and I don't know if there's going to be room for him in the NFL if he can't change, but that's how he made his money. That's how he became the safety that he became, was delivering hits like that. But the NFL is telling you, we don't want you leading with your helmet. Even if your helmet doesn't hit their helmet, we don't want you torpedoing. We do not want the Troy Polamalu, hands to your sides, and I'm just going to throw my helmet in there and see what happens. So could it have been a penalty? Yes, it wasn't. So I'm always inclined to say, I don't really love when the NFL comes out after the fact and throws out penalties. If the referees did not deem it a penalty on the field, I think it's like, it's just weird because it's a phantom play now. You're going to fine him for something that didn't happen, essentially, because you didn't penalize Kareem Jackson for the hit on the field, yet you're going to fine him. If the Broncos... If Minnesota gets the penalty on that drive, that's a first down. They move almost to midfield or close to midfield. That changes the entire scope of this game. I'm not saying Minnesota wins or loses because of that play, but it changes things. So the referees didn't think it was a penalty, didn't call it, even though they were told, I guarantee you, before this game, to watch out for Kareem Jackson. They are keeping a close eye on him. But I'm not going to get on here today with a lot of energy on it. I don't like fining after the fact if the refs don't do it. But that's also the letter of the law. That's what they do now. They go back, they review, even if the officials did not call a penalty on the field. So,
yeah, I mean, it's tough. But when you just watch the replay over and over again, you know, his face mask is pointed at the ground. His mm-hmm. hands are up near his chest. They're not like he's, you know, opening his arms to tackle somebody. And that's a real bang-bang play. Like, if you slow it down, yeah, the ball is already out of his hands before he got hit. And, you know, Dobbs' his helmet does spin a different way, so I would foresee some kind of punishment.
There probably will be. And I don't know if that's going to be a suspension. I don't know if the NFL looks at... Because how many games now has he been suspended for? He's missed, what, 3 now? 4? Because he got the one after the Washington game, and then, of course, missed 2 recently.
And we see this in other sports, like, you know, repeat offenders. You know, Draymond Green this past weekend. Like,
sure.
You will get a harder punishment if you keep doing it.
Yes. Yeah. You know, Draymond Green. Whew. What a weird thing that was. And that one really bugged the heck out of me, because that's not a football play. That's not a basketball play. It's not a sports play. You just went up behind Rudy Gobert and started strangling him.
Almost assault.
Put him on the probably assault. Yeah. Like, that's not basketball, bro. That's not basketball. Will he get fined? Will he get suspended? I hope he does. Obviously, as a Broncos fan, I don't think he should get suspended. As just a regular football fan, I don't think he should be suspended. I'm being honest on that assessment. Should he be fined by the letter of the law? They will go back and review it, and they will deem it a penalty. Are they going to fine him for leading with his helmet? And if they do, I'm not going to argue it. It's not a helmet-to-helmet necessarily. It really wasn't. But it was leading in with your helmet with that kind of reckless play that they're trying to weed out of the game. That being said, you get the fumble recovery, and here's the Broncos. They are allergic. I'm convinced. Offensively, they are allergic to taking advantage of turnovers. Broncos' first possession. Quick throw to Judy. Then they got a first down. That was the first down. Second and eight, Russ gets sacked. Now it's third and long. They settle for a field goal. They get it. Broncos go up. 3-0. Broncos defense. Here's what's interesting. Vikings start driving down the field, making it a quick pace drive. Dobbs is looking good. They get a big gain to the left to start that drive. Madison was looking fantastic for a long time. He had the Broncos number. They're rolling. Justin Simmons almost gets an interception. But either way, they get the third down stop. They hold them to a punt. Broncos get the ball back. I won't go through the entire game. Just how the flow of this thing went down. Broncos second possession, third and short. It was a three and out punt. Very predictable play calling. Vikings get the ball back on their third possession. They drive down. They get a score. Or they get a touchdown on that one. That was a beautiful touchdown by Dobbs. Dobbs should have been sacked. I think it was Cooper. Cooper couldn't get to him. And then he just kind of does a slight pump fake, finds his tight end in the end zone, and the Vikings get their score. Broncos more. Three and outs. Vikings go down. They get a field goal. Now it's 10-6, Minnesota, with 4 minutes left in the half. Denver's defense, though, kept this team in the game constantly. That's what we've been seeing in this four-game win streak. They continue to get stop after stop after stop after stop, and nothing really festers. They don't allow a three-score lead. There was a two-score lead at one point in this game, but they're not allowing that third score, which would have essentially put this thing out if you were in the late third quarter. They kept coming up with the stops, and finally the Broncos offense takes advantage of it, getting a touchdown late with a minute left. Russell Wilson finds Courtland Sutton. But I just got to say, man, Vance Joseph and this defense, they have found a way. They have found a way to make plays. I mean, get turnovers. Justin Simmons has been amazing. Nothing short of amazing. But ultimately, I tweeted out at 8 o'clock Mountain Time, when the Broncos were down two scores. I still felt like Denver was going to get the win and Russell Wilson was going to be a hero. Is Russ the hero? You tell me. This was the play. Russell Wilson to Courtland Sutton, another touchdown, his eighth touchdown of the season, and Russ and Sutton find a way to give the Broncos their very first lead of the game.
Vikings bring the heat again. Wilson throwing, it's up for grabs, and it's caught for the touchdown by Sutton!
It was beautiful, man. I kind of thought it was going to be a pick. It was kind of a duck. That ball was wobbly up there. I thought maybe there was going to be a pick, a guy running in, almost like a punt type situation. But Sutton's body, man, he's a big receiver. He goes up for it, doesn't leave any doubt, makes sure that nobody else can get around him and pick that thing up underneath him, makes the catch. And listen, I've been critical of Courtland Sutton. When you actually just look at his numbers throughout the course of the season, he's had 499 receiving yards. That's not, like, strong. You know, he has 45 receptions for about 500 yards. But it's the eight touchdowns. It's his ability to get open in the red zone. And that's critical. I will take touchdowns and red zone touchdowns over, you know, if it were he was at 872 yards but four touchdowns, those touchdowns right there are the difference, one of the big differences in being 5-5 as opposed to 3-7 or whatever.
Yeah, and I think with Sutton, I mean, just from what I've seen, his touchdowns have been those kind of 50-50 balls, almost 40-60, if you want to look at it that way. So maybe you'd like to see him getting a little more open. You don't like to just say, hey, let me throw it up and pray Sutton comes down with it. But, I mean, that speaks to his ability. And, yeah, I mean, that throw was not the greatest throw.
Wasn't the greatest throw, but I kind of—
against a better cornerback, it's maybe tipped away.
Maybe. But I think Sutton, you know, what is he, 6'4"? You put that ball in a position where he's going to have to be strong. He's going to have to be the tougher receiver to do it and bring it down. So I got a lot of shout outs today for Sutton because he had every reason to hang his head this year and over the course of the last several years, not really being a part of success on this team. But when crunch time hits and you need somebody to make a play, it's Courtland Sutton. What was it back in the day they used to say about Chris Carter? I don't remember who it was, but some guy was critical of him, said all he does is catch touchdowns. That's all he does. I'm telling you, man, you give me 8 touchdowns and 500 yards receiving as opposed to 900 yards receiving and 3 touchdowns, I'm going to take the touchdowns, because that's where the Broncos have struggled mightily over the years, is not being able to finish drives. And they continued to do that yesterday, but it was that touchdown that made the difference when you have a defense playing this well. I mean, you look at all the numbers in the league, Sutton, as far as receiving yards, he's way down the line. He's ranked 40th at 499 yards, 40th in the NFL. But then you go to touchdowns, and he is second in the league behind your guy, Tyreek Hill, with 9 touchdowns. Now, Tyreek, again, that's what you call a special receiver. He does it all. He has the receptions, he has the yards, he has the touchdowns. Unfortunately, the Broncos are not in that position to have that kind of player at this stage. But what they do have is a guy that has a nose for the end zone. And those are rare players. So I got to say, Courtland Sutton has risen from the ashes, so to speak, when I think, myself included, we have written so many of these players off in this past few months, past couple of years. But they're finding opportunities. They're making the most of it somehow, some way. And Courtland Sutton was perfect in that one. Angel, we'll keep on with Broncos Vikings. I got a lot of thoughts here because I was the guy 5 weeks ago. Every week, they lose this one, it's tank time. They lose this one, it's tank time. Listen, I've changed. I'm recognizing I'm seeing the error of my ways. Christmas is almost right around the corner. We're going to be talking about Scrooge and how he sees the error of his ways. He needs the ghosts and the spirits to come talk to him and Christmas past and all that stuff. Well, I've been visited by 3 spirits. One of those spirits is Russell Wilson. I still don't understand that spirit. It's creepy. It freaks me out. But he's helping me see the error of my ways. The other one is Sean Payton. He is this kind of scary, overwhelming guy, and I'm not sure I agree with his tactics and the way he does things, but he's also showing me that I need to believe in this team. I don't know what I'm seeing. I just know that I'm waking up in the middle of the night, and I got all these Bronco spirits telling me that maybe you can win. Justin Simmons, I remember when he was a part of the 9-7 Broncos team. He blocked a kick against Sean Payton. And that was like, oh, this Simmons guy is going to be a stud. He's going to be legit. Since that point, the Broncos have not tasted success. But he stays in. He stays a leader on this team. I've interviewed the guy. He has such an even-keel personality. Never too high, never too low. And it's starting to pay off for him. So the 3 spirits for the Denver Broncos have me believing again. Let's get to the good, the bad, the ugly from the weekend that was, presented by FMS Bank. Banking made simple. For more, go to FMSBank.com/KFKA. Let me go with this. Broncos win. How about that? That's just easy. Broncos get the dub 4 in a row. Haven't done it since 2016. Now they have Cleveland. And I'll talk about Cleveland because I was really a fan of what happened with their quarterback. I liked their quarterback, and he cried. He cried on the sidelines, Angel, and I loved it. So there is crying in the league that I'm okay with, and that was one. So I'll talk about that. But the Broncos get the good for me, got the dub. The bad, I was really wanting to not see a two losses in a row for the Nuggets. See how far they can go until they get there. But they did. That was, Angel, that was their worst game of the season so far against Cleveland. Now, we know the issues at hand here. We know the bench is going to be the bench. We're hopeful that it gets better, that somebody on that team rises up. I did see some good things with Christian Brown last week overall, but it just has me obviously wishing that we could get Jamal Murray back ASAP, because that's going to help the bench and everything on down the line. The ugly is the CU Buffs. Ooh, man. That was bad. I mean,
leave, kinda. Maybe.
You what?
You believe?
No, do I believe?
Do we?
No. In the Buffs? No, that... excuse me, I'm dying. That game was one of those where you just go, can we get through the season here? Can we just be done? And then reload, see what happens with the Buffaloes. 56-14 to Washington State. Now, Washington State, I thought they were all good at the beginning of the season, and then they hit the Pac-12, and they started getting smoked. They're 2-6 in the conference, so I thought, this will be a close game. Buffs should be able to pull this out. They had no interest in trying to win this game. And they had a shot, Angel, because there's a lack of bowl teams right now. So I thought, if they can win this game and even lose to Utah, they could... Because if you're grabbing 5-win football teams to go to a bowl game, aren't you going to grab CU for the ratings purposes alone? So if they could have beat Washington State, they could have still got themselves into a bowl game based on 5. And that's staying power. That's marketability that you can't buy, although they are buying it. So what does this mean for the Colorado Buffaloes? They have Utah now. They're on the road, 1 o'clock on Saturday.
Do you rest your starters? As many as you can? At least.
Do you play Shador? Yeah, do you just start, like, we need backup quarterbacks in here. We need to see what we've got. Because Shador gets hurt in that game, and he was out. So do you just say, yeah, let's take it easy with some of our guys here? What do you got to gain?
Pride. Not being a joke of the offseason and everyone pointing fingers at you saying, hey, I told you so.
That's not going to... Yeah, you beat Utah. Let's say they do something crazy and they play starters and they beat Utah. Does that change that much? Does it change the feel of this team going into the offseason?
Maybe. I think the overall question is Deion Sanders as a coach, as a program builder. You know, you're already starting to see some recruits flip and decommit. We'll see what he does, if he can bring that same magic with the transfer portal, but it's going to be... He's going to have a lot of work to do to try to get that hype back and then have the talent to back it up.
Talon Chandler has flipped his commitment from Colorado to Missouri. He was an offensive lineman that was a lot of people were high on. He has recently flipped it. So you're going to see some of that stuff. This is what happens. This is the nature of the beast, and it's going to be magnified even more when there is a guy that flips his commitment. From CU to somewhere else, that's going to be the bigger story than anybody else decommitting or whatever. I still think, again, I sound like a broken record, but the truth is still in between, somewhere in between. Make no bones about it. Like Jay Norvell and the CSU Rams from a season ago, it will be all about the offensive line. If you can bring in the necessary big bodies up front to protect Shador, help this team out, because that's their biggest flaw. That's their biggest issue. Right now, I mean, every game, save for now, you got two games that are blowouts, Washington State and Oregon. Every game was competitive. So you could rest your hat on that and say, man, we're one or two guys away. We're a couple of offensive linemen away. But then the Washington State game, these late games when you don't have much to play for, although they did have a lot to play for because they could have got into a bowl game, even with a loss to Utah. You do wonder where everyone's head is at this stage. Even Primetime said, this is the hardest stretch I've ever gone through. You know, as a pro, whether that's coaching or playing, definitely the hardest stretch. So we're going to find out a lot about Primetime. You know, there was a listener that came out, our boy Noob, out to our bowling event on Friday, which was awesome. Raised some money for World Food Bank. That was great. He said, I don't know that Primetime's really got humbled yet. Well, he got humbled against Oregon. I think he's bit. Is he being humbled? Is he getting humbled right now? I sure think he is.
I think he is. I don't know if he's showing it as much.
I don't think he's going.
I don't think that's in his toolbox to do that.
I don't think he wants to either. I don't necessarily think he should, because you got to keep using what got you at least to this level of life. You know, you're a Hall of Fame player. You were a well-respected commentator, and obviously you've shown that you can coach at a good level with Jackson State. So all those things that got you to this level. It was the persona. It was all that stuff. But does he need to edit a bit? All guys do. Every coach right now, I talk about Jay Norvell in the offense. They all need to look in the mirror and edit a few things. They all have changes. If you did not win the title, or you are not, you know, at least in title conversations in your conference at the beginning of November, then you've got to change the way you do things. That's what Big Hub just asking. Should they rest Shador for this last game? Let the backup play. See, in me personally, I don't care about pride. I don't care about momentum at the end. I would say, who do I need to see more from? And let's give them shots. Let's give them opportunities. Who do I need to see more from at this stage? Because you got one game left. Everybody knows you're going to lose it. So you might as well just see who you have out there. 31 minutes after the hour, let's take a quick break. It's the whole show powered by Chevron on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKN.
Stay up to speed with the Rams with the Isaiah Stevens Show on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Ali Farokmanesh, assistant men's basketball coach at Colorado State, and you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
We've definitely gone through some tests and gone through some trials. It's been a hard season, been some good too. And we're always going to find the good. And I think the best thing that we can do is continue to believe in one another. These fans were unbelievable tonight. We needed them. And we needed them all here to continue to support. And we're going to turn this thing around. We're going to turn this thing around. And we're going to do it with great diligence, great work ethic, great togetherness, and belief. And that's how we're going to get it done. And it's going to be an amazing story when we do.
I remember when Russ said that last year at the end of last season. And I didn't believe it. You know, I liked what he had to say. You know, you don't want to hear the opposite of that. You want to hear a guy talk about belief and doing the right things. We'll fix this. But to kind of start to see it work, and I still think it's clunky, man. I still think Russ is... he's not the Seattle Russ. Maybe he's not that different from the Seattle Russ, though. It's still just strange the way things transpire with him. Get this, like, when you look at this stat here from Next Gen Stats, great social media account to follow. Russell Wilson recorded the fourth highest open target rate, 65.7%, in a game this season in Week 11. It was Wilson's sixth game this season targeting receivers out of the backfield at a 30% plus rate. No other quarterback has more than two such games. 30% plus going to the running back. That is their offense. You look at their chart, a lot of these completions, left side of the field before the line of scrimmage, right side of the field before the line of scrimmage. Not many passes going beyond the line of scrimmage. And there's not a lot of vertical. There's nothing vertically down the middle of the field. You're not seeing that really at all. Even the touchdown passes to Cortland Sutton have been off to the left. That's both good and bad. You know, Russ is taking what the defense gives him, especially in that final drive, going to Samaje Perine, who has just been... I mean, I'm a big fan of that dude. Give me more of that guy. And I love Javonte Williams, but Perine's showing, hey, I can be a bruiser, but I can also catch the football and make some guys miss. I'm not going down on the first hit. But that's an astonishing stat. Like I said, both good and bad, that you're not seeing a lot of Russ going down the field. But it's working for now. Is that sustainable? I won't discredit Russ here and put him down this way. But there are similarities to the Tebow year, to the 2011 year. Russ is a way better quarterback than Tebow. Tebow was one of the worst starting quarterbacks ever, if not the worst. He couldn't complete passes. You never see Russell Wilson 2 for 6. You're not going to see that. Tim Tebow could throw, for some reason, he could throw a 35-yard deep pass, like you saw the touchdown to Demaryius Thomas against the Steelers all those years ago, one of the great Bronco plays. But then you ask him to complete like a quick little 5-and-out route, he'd skip rocks. The ball would just skip. He couldn't even get it there. So I'm not saying the quarterback play is similar, but the way they're winning games in such an unconventional way. I mean, look at Dobbs. Dobbs is completing passes down the middle of the field. He's finding guys. He's making it look easy. Now, again, they get turnovers on him. He turned out to, you know, in that game at least, will he be found out from now on? I don't know. But he at least there was a pop to the offense, a pop to that offense like you see in the NFL with a lot of these quarterbacks. With Russ, It's it's like you're playing Madden for the first time, but you're putting it on the Hall of Fame level, and you know any pass over 10 yards is going to be an interception because you suck. So you're just going to do these little quick routes to get guys open and see if you can just methodically drive down the field. That is the Broncos offense, and that is not what Sean Payton had in mind, or at least not what he did back with Drew Brees and the Saints.
I think the season up to this point, it's reached a, not a climax or a peak, because then it goes down, but it's your frame of mind has to change at this point. Now you're at 500, you fell down the hole, you've climbed back out of it, now you're out on the ground. How do you respond? And these games are going to get tougher. You're going to get into this playoff hunt. You're going to get into this race. If the defense gets an offense that maybe they can't stop them as well, do you trust this offense to be able to push down the field? And we talked about that a little bit last week, when Russell is not threatening you down the field nearly as much.
Yeah, does that take away the run game? Which it did. But, you know, fortunately, the Broncos kept coming up with turnovers that set up field goals. Every time you felt like the defense was finally just going to, that's enough, they're going to run all over us, whatever, they kept coming up with the stops. They came up with the fumbles. They kept pushing, ripping the ball out of guys' hands, getting interceptions, blitzing the quarterback, making him throw a bad pass. So every time you thought that this defense was going to lay down, they kept fighting right back. And that was what was so impressive. Is that sustainable for the next 7 games, right? 7 games. 17 weeks.
It's tough, and this is a trend I saw last year. Coming out of the second half, 3 3-and-outs. That is concerning when you get into November and December games.
No question. The offense is still a concern. At some point, and that's why I like what Sean Payton's saying. He's like, I'm not ready to groove. We're not grooving yet, man.
We're 500.
We're winning sloppy, dirty, nasty, ugly games, and maybe you can win more sloppy, ugly, dirty, nasty games in the next down the stretch here. But if you want more, if you want to be a little bit better, shock the world and get into the playoffs, then it's going to have to be a little more Russ magic. Not so many check down, punt, 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 punt. Oh, finally, there's some magic. It's got to be more. Now you got the Cleveland Browns coming to town on Sunday. And Cleveland is 7-3, Angel. Now, Deshaun Watson, we heard that story. But my guy, Dorian Thompson Robinson, DTR, 24 of 43, 165 yards and an interception. Nothing to, like, go crazy about. He also ran for 20 yards. But he did enough to get them the win. And Pittsburgh, of course, Kenny Pickett, 100 yards passing. You want to say last night's game was ugly? That was an ugly football game. And Cleveland's sitting at 7-3. That's actually a great spot for the Broncos to play them this week, because they feel like we're a playoff team. We just can't screw it up. We just got to find a way to win a couple more games, and we'll get in the playoffs. So there's no desperation like the Vikings had last night. We'll talk more about that matchup and what it looks like. 42 minutes after the hour. Before we break here, I want to shout out to On the Rocks Liquor. I want to say this from the folks at On the Rocks Liquor. They're thankful for all of their customers. They're doing a Thanksgiving drawing on Thanksgiving Day. So they're open regular hours, 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. So if you didn't get that bottle of wine you wanted or whatever, you could stop by On the Rocks Liquor. They got a drawing going on. You just write your name down, way to reach out. You could win stuff. That's at On the Rocks Liquor off of Highway 34, half a mile south of Highway 34 and 47th Avenue. On the Rocks Liquor, make your next celebration On the Rocks. Happy Thanksgiving from John, Tony, and the wonderful crew over at On the Rocks Liquor. It's the whole show powered by Chevron. Let's jump out and get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is Ed Werder, NFL reporter for ESPN and a 1982 graduate of the University of Northern Colorado. Hope you'll continue to listen to the award-winning Hull Show, 1310 KFKA.
The Colorado State Rams football team still alive. Could still become bowl eligible. We talked about it. They needed 3 after they lost to Wyoming. They needed 3. They got 2. One more game left. A trip to Hawaii. Hawaii got smoked in Laramie by the Cowboys over the weekend, but they also beat Air Force in Hawaii. That shows you kind of the difference of what it looks like. And again, Zach Larrier got hurt in that Hawaii game early. How much of a difference does that make? a little bit, I suppose. But CSU's still alive. They beat the Nevada Wolfpack 30-20. Felt a little bit closer than it needed to be, but that's kind of this Rams team right now. Even things you think should come easily to them still are a bit of a struggle, but you have an improve here. You got the dub. You're 5-6. You're 2 wins better than last year. That's progress. So we can talk all day about how Jay Norvell's running the offense, a conservative style of air raid. Bottom line is you're improved. You win one more, you're much improved. It's fair to say you go from 3-6 to bowl eligibility, and you're feeling much better about your situation. BFN, 245 yards, a touchdown, but a pick six. Eesh.
What's his ratio?
I don't have that up right now. Maybe let me know. Can't be great, can it? 20-15. 20 touchdowns, 15 interceptions.
I mean, it's not a Jameis Winston 30-30, but you're halfway there.
You're throwing more touchdowns than interceptions, and
11 sacks.
Still like his style. Make no mistake about it, this offseason it's going to be about further evaluation of Braden Fowler-Nicolosi and what they could potentially do at quarterback, but it sounds like he's their guy going forward, maybe a full offseason under his belt, and maybe two more games. You got the Hawaii game and then a bowl game. Two more games to learn a little bit more. Colorado State gets the dub.
If they don't, do you think they could be considered for one of those extra teams?
Maybe because of the ratings that they drew when they played CU. Even though we all know that people...
They weren't watching for you.
They came for CU, but they stayed for CSU. Is that fair to say? Because if that would have been a blowout, they might have went away.
We'll stick around because this game's competitive.
Yeah. But if it was a blowout, go away, and then
maybe
you learn a lot.
I want to see Henry Blackburn lose.
So. Yes. That's a good point. Are the Rams attractive enough where you would consider them in?
It would be a big bowl game. It would be like first week of bowl games at 10 a.m. or something.
Anything right now is better than nothing for Colorado State. But I don't know. We got picks coming up on Wednesday. We'll do picks on Wednesday. Angel, I broke even. 3-3.
I even gave you a bye week.
Yeah. I did nothing with it. I didn't do any worse. I didn't do any better. I had the Broncos -2.5. They went for 2, didn't get it. Would have had that at least.
I heard a conspiracy about that.
That was a gambling thing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had CSU -11.5. They won by 10. I had the three I got right, UNC losing, unfortunately. I got Air Force losing. I did pick UNLV to win that game. Zach Larrier was out. A lot of people call me crazy. I'm like, do you know what's going on, bro? And then what else did I get? Wyoming? I got Wyoming to cover against Hawaii. I thought Wyoming would get after it. 11:51 the time. Let's take a quick break. It's the whole show powered by Chevron here on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 at 1310 KFKA.
You like podcasts? We podcast every show immediately after it airs at 1310kfka.com or wherever you download your favorite stuff. Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Jeff Linder, head men's basketball coach of the University of Wyoming Cowboys, and you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA.
Welcome back into the whole show powered by Chevron Renaissance Insurance Group in Windsor, formed by two UNC Bears alumni over 20 years ago. One of those guys, Ryan Hicks. That's my guy. I'm meeting up with him later this week. Talk shop. He's a big sports guy, big community guy. They had a team playing in our bowling tournament on Friday as well because they're giving back to World Food Bank. And that's who they are. That's what they do. Renaissance Insurance has always had our backs, the backs of the community members in Northern Colorado. They specialize in risk management, commercial, and personal insurance needs. Don't lose what you've been working so hard for. Call Ryan at Renaissance Insurance, 970-674-8825. If anything, call him, say, hey, thanks for supporting live and local radio throughout Northern Colorado. We're the only everything sports talk show in Northern Colorado. You know, our boy Bruce Dick does an amazing job talking preps. Good Morning NoCo, you're going to get a flavor of everything, you know, news, politics, weather, and sports. This program is going to dive in on the college teams we care about, the pro teams we care about. The only one that does it up here. And we couldn't do it without those sponsors, without guys like Renaissance Insurance Group. So thank you. It's the week of thanks, right? Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday. All right, second hour, we got the big story of the day. Angel, pay attention to this one when we come back.